20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know my guest. He is, of course, Aaron Nagler, Cheesehead TV. You can find him on social media at Aaron Nagler. I have no idea when this episode is going to be airing. We are recording this on 9:30 a.m. Central Time, March 21st. I believe it's going to be airing next week when I'm going to be out of town in Florida. But either way, whenever it airs, Aaron, it'll be good stuff because you're on the show. I appreciate you being here. How the heck are you doing, my friend?
That's really nice of you. I really appreciate being asked to be on. And it's kind of like we're in Interstellar. Like, this is a message that will reach a future version of yourself whenever you hear it next week. I like it.
A version where very clearly Trey Hendrickson is a Green Bay Packer.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you're going on vacation. That means we'll get some major big breaking news. Packers news.
There you go.
That check is in the mail. No,
I am. I'm just doing it to help everyone out. So you're welcome. I'll take one for the team. And Aaron, you'll have lots to talk about next week.
Can't wait.
Let's start with those additions so far. We had the opportunity to kind of talk the day of free agency and some of those Green Bay additions, talk a little bit about Banks and Hobbs, but obviously free agency is basically done and over with by this time. Very, you know, value free agents left at this point. They go and get Mecole Hardman as well. Of course, they already brought back Brandon McManus, brought back Isaiah McDuffie, some key free agent. I don't know if I want to say key, but some free agents from the team are gone as well. Just your overarching thoughts on this offseason so far.
I mean, it's pretty Packers-esque, right? There's no move that they've made that really surprises. I do think the lack of a big swing was a bit of a surprise, since so many of us sitting on the outside looking in, obviously there was the, you know, words from Brian Gutekunst about urgency, which I do think maybe was a little bit misread by the public. And I don't doubt for a moment that Packers fans went into this offseason thinking, okay, this is a team that, in Brian's words, has to get back to competing for championships. And it's very clear the Packers' idea, as far as their ability to do just that, is in large part in keeping with their traditional MO. They are going to continue to draft and develop. They're going to continue to improve from within. They've made a change or two, obviously, most notably getting a new defensive line coach. But for the most part, they are doing what they've always done. And I understand how, sitting here in March, that feels like sitting on your hands or not getting better. But this is a group that knows their roster better than anybody, and they know what to expect from, you know, whoever it might be coming up in the ranks, so to speak, to take that next step, be that next developmental guy who really maybe surprises the public. But, you know, they've still got the draft to go to add pieces, and there's no doubt in my mind that this is the team that is going to compete definitely for the division. And dependent on a surprise or two, I think they'll be right in the mix once again, as they always are.
Yeah, I think so too. And I agree with literally everything that you said, where, you know, maybe not that big splash free agent signing. I do think there's something to be said of looking at your roster and looking at maybe some of the biggest weaknesses and saying, like, all right, how can we upgrade that? And to me, one of the biggest weaknesses in the defensive, just the defense in general, was Eric Stokes. And moving on from Eric Stokes and going to Nate Hobbs, I think, has the ability to be actually a pretty significant upgrade in totality. And then on the offensive line, to me, I thought one of the bigger weaknesses, especially in the run game, was Josh Myers. And now you bring in an Aaron Banks, who has the ability to, I think, be a very plus player in the run game. And I think they're going to be very similar players as pass protectors. I think you actually upgrade that offensive line just by going from Myers to Banks. It may not be going from a solid player to an all-pro player and getting that big name in here. And maybe that's, again, right, what we all kind of wanted. But going from two of, I think, what were kind of your weaker links on both the offense and the defense to two what I think are going to be good players for this team, I still think that actually has the ability to be both pretty sizable upgrades on both sides of the ball.
Well, and especially when you look at the offensive line, and I am fascinated with the move. I mean, the declarative move. I mean, Tom Silverstein had that report out like almost immediately after they signed Banks, right, that Elgton Jenkins is moving to center. I thought for sure they'd at least, you know, head to camp and keep it open as far as competition goes. But man, that did not take long. And it was clear that that is the plan, right? Now, who knows what happens in camp? Maybe Elton's not it. That is entirely possible. I don't expect that, obviously. But I am fascinated to see that move in particular, because I mean, it's been a while since he's played there, right? I mean, yep. That is a position he played in college, obviously, but, and I know they loved him at center coming out, but yeah, to me, that's an interesting move as far as it really, to me, signals, yeah, we're going to continue to pound the rock. You know, this is a team that obviously really leaned into the running game last year, especially with Josh Jacobs. But to your point, you know, with Myers along the front there, there were so many instances where Josh Jacobs had to make something out of nothing, where he's getting hit at or behind the line of scrimmage and turning some of those plays into positive yardage just on his own, right? Yeah. The idea that, okay, maybe we get him with a little bit more room to operate. I mean, you saw how well he performed last year.
Yep.
I get pretty excited thinking about, well, is there even more to tap into there? And I talked about this yesterday on Cheesehead TV, but, and then the idea that you're throwing in Marshawn Lloyd, who's essentially a lottery ticket at this point, you know, his rookie year coming up, because we got absolutely nothing from him last season. I don't know. I start to get really excited about the run game in that regard.
I have Marshawn Lloyd on my things I wanted to ask you today, but it's funny that you brought up that point about Josh Jacobs, because as I watched this running game last year, it was a really good running game. And a lot of times it was a really good running game because of Josh Jacobs, because yes. He made people miss and he made something out of nothing. I was just talking on the radio just a little bit before this of how there's a world in which these unbelievable things that Josh Jacobs did last year, where he had to make guys miss 2 to 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage to get 4 yard gains.
Right.
If he can make those guys miss at the second level instead, in those, you know, 4 to 5 yard gains turn into 15, 20, 25, 30, 40 yard gains, that has the ability to be a big opportunity for this offense as well. So it's never quite that simple. It's not that black and white, but I do think there has the ability to be better run blocking up front going from Myers to Aaron Banks, despite, you know, maybe some moving around up there. And if that's the case, and I kind of low key, like, we'll see if it's Ryan or if it's Morgan or how that ends up shaking out. But I low key kind of like the Aaron Banks, Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan interior of that line with the ability to actually move some people when you need it. That gets me a little bit geeked up as well.
Well, there's the other component too here, where I do wonder if possibly they get back to running a little bit more zone stuff and duo and things that we saw them really successful at in 2023.
Yeah,
that made Jordan Love so successful in the passing game, because that was the kind of ongoing theme last year. Is like they were very productive in the Jacobs was very productive in the ground game, but that never translated to production in the play action game, in the passing game in general. And I do wonder if you got Banks in there now, you got some people movers, right? And maybe you get back to a little bit more zone and you get those double teams up front, and then you're getting up to the second level in the run game, but then in the passing game, you're allowing Jordan Love to maybe do some more of that boot stuff. And obviously his knee being healthy will help in this regard, but just get back to a few more of those principles and sets that worked so well in 2023 that we really didn't see a whole lot of in 2024.
It felt like the Aaron Jones offense. And again, this is a very oversimplification of it, but the Aaron Jones offense had a lot of runs that had a lot of baked in really smart passing stuff off of it. Yep. And it didn't quite feel like they ever quite found their rhythm with the Josh Jacobs running game and how to sort of find plays that played
off of that, right?
As effectively. Yep. There was stuff that was there, but it wasn't as effective as the Aaron Jones stuff was, which was, again, interesting because Jacobs was at minimum as effective as a runner. It just, they didn't have quite the feel for it, the concept for it. I don't know exactly what it was, but it just didn't feel as connected as it did in 2023. I think that's going to be something they have to get back to in 2024. Just that kind of real quick aside, I did have this as something I want to talk about. I know you talked about it on Cheesehead TV recently as well, but Marshawn Lloyd, I think, can be a very easily forgotten piece of this. I don't know about you, Aaron. There were times, and I don't say this lightly, there were times where I thought Marshawn Lloyd looked like the best running back in training camp last year. Now, Josh Jacobs is a savvy veteran. He knows how to ramp up during training camp and maybe not do everything that he, show everything and kind of save some of that for the season. But man, there were times where, you know, Lloyd would kind of take over and be like, man, just look at that burst, that acceleration, a little bit of wiggle. Like there were some exciting stuff that he showed out there. I think he can be a really fun player in this offense.
Well, just a perfect compliment, right? To what Jacobs gives you. And it's so funny you say that, because I'll never forget very specifically talking about how excited I was about Lloyd at the beginning of the year. The Colts game, he has his one run that's on tape that the public can see that gets called back because of a penalty, but he bounces outside and he picks up a ton of yards and it's very exciting. And I was like, oh, this is what we saw this summer. Like, yep, to your point, right? We saw a lot of that style, right? And man, so many instantly negative Packers fans, like, oh, it's just one run. There's a penalty on the run. It doesn't mean anything, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, I'm telling you, come on out to Radnički Field this summer. Gotcha, and I promise you, you're going to get excited by this kid. And yeah, that was my point. Like, he is a bit of a lottery ticket. Like, we don't know what they have when he is, you know, fully integrated into the offense. We certainly haven't seen a ton of him against NFL competition in an NFL offense. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. He's a really, really fun player. And out of the passing game and the running game, I think there's a variety of ways. I even think there's some opportunity, and we'll see how this ends up with Mecole Hardman and Keyshawn Nixon, things like that. I think there's some potential as a kick returner there as well, but he's a very talented player, and I'm really excited to see. Hopefully he can stay healthy in 2025. All right, two of the big ones this offseason are that they did not address, of course, are wide receiver and defensive line. I know you've talked about defensive line recently, and just, you know, this is sort of the big surprise. Brian talked about it pretty aggressively of how the front four has to be better. They have to be able to win with four up front. I mean, I looked at some of his comments, and I'm like, all right, I was like, they're going to add a defensive lineman here. Right. And as of recording this, the only thing that they've done on the defensive line so far is lose TJ Slayton. So there has not been any additions there whatsoever. What level of surprise do you have, and what maybe is I guess any reason for optimism still on the defensive line?
Well, once free agency actually hit, I can't say I was terribly surprised, simply because there wasn't a whole lot on offer, like especially on edge players, where you would hope that these guys would hit the market, but many of them did not, right? No. And as far as some of the defensive tackles that were signed in free agency, man, you got big money for guys who are coming off injuries, who are older. And we know that's just not how the Packers tend to operate, especially in free agency. They don't want to add guys who are, you know, at the end of their careers. They want guys who are at least coming off their rookie deals, if not maybe mid-career, what have you.
Right.
So, there wasn't a whole lot on offer there. So, I wasn't terribly surprised. But that being said, it's still glaring when you look at this team and this roster right now where, okay, you're coming off last year, and there's plenty of concerns all over the roster and all over the team, but man, A, number one with a bullet is the pass rush. And the fact that there has been nothing done, like materially, other than changing out your defensive line coach, yeah, I understand where fans get maybe a little trepidatious, but like I said earlier, they know this roster better than anybody. Clearly, they have a plan as far as what the rotations are going to be and hopefully whatever additions they get in the draft, because I have to think with, you know, the draft is so funny because people are always, I had it in my mentions this morning on Twitter, trying to fill immediate needs. And it's like, well, they're looking, yes, at this year and definitely want some contributors in that regard. But you also look to the next year and the next 2 years, and you look at the contracts and how things are set up. And man, defensive tackle becomes a major need real quickly for this team. Whether it's Devontae Wyatt heading into the final year of his rookie deal, I'll be very surprised if they pull the trigger on the fifth-year option. Most likely Kenny Clark is playing his last year in Green Bay, given his contract. So suddenly that becomes a really thin position, especially when you look at not a whole lot of contribution or development or taking a step forward from Carl Brooks or Colby Wooden, the way you probably would have hoped going into 2024. So for me, defensive tackle becomes a number one with a bullet, the most likely thing we'll see in this draft, because I think at edge, they've invested there, right? And there's no doubt they're looking for continued improvement, steps forward in that regard. That doesn't mean they won't take an edge. I think they obviously will have it on their kind of target list, so to speak. But man, I just think defensive tackle is the most obvious kind of area where this team needs to be better and needs to be way more effective at creating havoc, getting after the quarterback, and causing, you know, all sorts of problems for the offensive line.
In a defensive tackle heavy draft, it would not surprise me if they ended up with two defensive tackles. I think they end up quite possibly still taking five linemen, meaning offensive linemen, defensive linemen in this draft. I think this is going to be a meat and potatoes draft. I think this is going to be, you know, two areas where this draft is actually fairly deep and where Green Bay needs it, both in the short term and in the long term. I think they want competition in a lot of those spots, whether it's defensive end, defensive tackle, offensive lineman. I think we could see a lot of those with maybe a wide receiver thrown in, a corner thrown in, and that might be your day. Like a wide receiver, a corner, and a lot of linemen could easily be the draft here, but you never know. We know they're going to go best player available. Hopefully one of those maybe best player availables is a wide receiver, because that's another position that they haven't addressed in any way outside of, I guess, Mecole Hardman now, which again, mileage may vary as to whether or not that's more kick returner, punt returner, or whether that's...
I think that's almost purely returner. I think that's and look, and that's, to me, a very smart signing. It's a one-year deal, and look, you cannot look at Jaden Reed returning punts and tell me that's where you want to keep, you know, keep going there. Like, he's so uncomfortable. It's so unnatural to him. Hardman is a born returner. Like, that, he is absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. To me, that's hidden yardage for the offense. You're putting Jordan Love and company in better positions because of returns. And look, they're incentivizing returns in the kickoff game with their rules. Proposals, we'll see if they actually pull the trigger on this, by, you know, having the touchback come out to the 35. They want people to return the ball, so have an actual returner rather than a guy you've thrown back there because you need a body. And that is the night and day difference that Hardman will provide.
I'll throw a name at you. Mecole Hardman, 5'10 187 primary returner. Tyler Irvin, 5'10 185. Mecole Hardman was a 4.340 guy. Tyler Irvin was a 4.440 guy. You look at Irvin, well, he was a running back. Hardman's a wide receiver. They actually used him primarily on passing downs and a lot of the gadget stuff, and even in the slot. Like, and if you look at Irvin in 2020, when he was actually on the team for the full season,
he was such a prime component of that offense, which was so efficient. Yes.
And 142 snaps, like 142 snaps. Like, I think if you told me Mecole Hardman was a primary kick returner, primary punt returner, played 142 snaps in a gadget Tyler Irvin role on offense with a 4.340 speed,
sign me up.
Right. Yep. Like, and I was surprised that they never really kind of filled that Tyler Irvin. And I get, like, you know, Jaden Reed can do some of that stuff, and Bo Melton, Christian Watson can do a little bit of it, but like, that was such an effective role for them. And if they have somebody that can do something similar, I'm all for it. I think this was a really just kind of fun back of the roster signing that could help. But as far as like kind of top of the roster wide receiver, they did not get that sort of player. It feels like they're not, I don't think they're going to find a way to get that, but it still feels like they need that field stretching component in some way. I would assume there's somebody coming in this draft that can stretch the field, just to at least have somebody, even MVS as a rookie had that ability to run those routes down the field. It just feels like they need something there.
Yeah. And I don't doubt for a moment they'll, you know, be looking for it, targeting it, what have you, but you know, the board has to fall the right way for that to happen. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if they just took a classic Packers wide receiver. Like, I know we've talked about Jaden Higgins, who I think fits that to a T, right? A big guy, good separation. He's not a guy who's going to take the top off, but he's just a classic Packers wide receiver. He checks every box, and it wouldn't surprise me simply because, again, you're talking about the defensive tackles earlier. Look at the wide receiver group. You've got Watson obviously coming off injury, but also heading into the final year of his deal along with Romeo Doubs. Man, it gets thin real quick. You know, if it, and so I think they would want to replenish that room, keep adding talent. And I do not doubt for a moment that they will do so in April. Now, the only question is if the board falls the right way, maybe they do it in round two. But I wouldn't be surprised if we get to say they don't do it on day one or two. And we get to day three and we see the classic Gutekunst 1-2-3, you know, and he just adds a bunch of bodies. Now, you know, obviously bodies they have studied and liked, and there's reasons for the selections, but on the outside looking in, you know, they've done it at running back, they've done it at wide receiver before, so
offensive line.
So that either way, there's most likely going to be a wide receiver addition at some point in April's draft.
I love me a good Goody triple up at some position. just give me one of the three that works out. It usually is the case. Yep. Obviously, Aaron Jones at the running back one. John Runyon Jr., I think, was the offensive lineman, one of the three. And then you said there was one other one, right? Was it wide receiver?
Wide receiver. MVS comes out of that group.
Jamon Moore. So yeah, Jamon Moore.
Hardly knew ye. Jamon Moore with one of the greatest touchdowns in preseason ever, and then did absolutely nothing else.
Hey, sometimes the best highlights you get are in preseason. Josh Jackson, another preseason highlight specialist with a pick six.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
What can you do? Just speaking of wide receivers for a moment, there's been a little bit of discussion on the old Twitterverse of maybe Jaden Reed needing to take that next progression and maybe be utilized a little bit more as an outside wide receiver, and just to see like, hey, can he take more of that burden on? He's been primarily just a slot guy. They've had a very specific way of utilizing him. He's a really talented wide receiver. His splits are insane. He's very good against zone. He has not done much against man, but it feels like, being the talented player that he is, that they maybe need to find a way to unlock him a little bit more and maybe utilize him a little bit more on the outside and hopefully get him cooking a little bit more against man-to-man coverage.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Go back and watch the first Vikings game if you have the stomach for it, and look at the touchdown he scores right before the end of the first half. I mean, that's a clear man situation that he smokes a dude and catches it. Now, he doesn't have a ton of separation, but he wins the route, right? I think a lot of these kind of, oh, he can't beat man narratives are a little overblown. There's no doubt that, yes, metrics-wise, he's probably not creating a ton of separation or what have you, but some of that is context-driven, like as far as he's working in certain situations, as you said, mostly from the slot, etc. I don't doubt for a moment that he is a guy they have to get going a little bit more as far as when he is pigeonholed, which he has been these first 2 years. I mean, I'm sure you've talked to Justice about this. We discussed it earlier on Cheesehead TV. The fact that in two seasons, he's played 33 total snaps when there are two wide receivers on the field tells you all you need to know about how they've approached utilizing him, right?
Yeah.
And I think there has to be a progression here where he's way too talented to be sitting on the sideline that much, especially because we know they want to run the ball. We know when they have those two wide receivers, they got to be able to block. I think he can get the job done, right?
Yeah.
I don't doubt for a moment that, you know, they are going to continue to utilize him mostly from the slot, but man, it can't be so stark, and you can't have these stretches in games or even through like multiple games week after week where you have these lulls where you don't even have a read on the field for a drive or two, or if it is, he's there for a handful of plays. He's way too talented. He's got to be given plenty more opportunities, and I think he will reward them.
I've heard a lot about best five guys on the offensive line. I need best five weapons out on the field more often. I need Josh Jacobs, Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, and maybe you can mix and match some of the other ones, but I need those three in particular on the field a lot at the same time. And I think that gives you your offense the best opportunity for success. So maybe that's a new best five mantra that they can adopt moving forward. I want to talk a little bit about the draft. Obviously, you've touched base on it, just maybe some of these needs and how they attack wide receiver, BPA, things like that. But the Packers have actual kind of needs going into this draft. We talked about defensive tackle, maybe a pass rusher, a deep field wide receiver. We know that they're going to do their sort of normal song and dance with best player available. They're going to stack their board the way that they want. Are they going to have to do a little bit of needs-based drafting? Like, I can't imagine, like, can they come out of this with, like, you know, just two, like, late-round defensive tackles or, you know, no wide receiver? Like, I get that you want to take BPA, and that's the right mantra here. And within BPA, of course, is some need-based stacking as well. But it feels like they're going to have to do a little bit of heavy lifting from a need standpoint in this draft.
Well, it's always kind of baked in, right? It's best player available at a position of need.
Yes.
Usually, right? Usually. And look, it's the Packers, so nothing would surprise me. Yes, outside looking in, you're making a lot of sense, Andy, but they drafted Tyron Hopper last year. Why? I'm still asking why. You know, barely played. It's a third round pick. It's not like a, you know, throwaway on day three here. That's a third round, day two premium pick for a dude who barely touched the field last year. Now, I'm sure they had their reasons, but it didn't make sense when they made the pick. Certainly doesn't make sense a year later. That's the Packers, and they have whatever reasoning inside the building for doing the things they do. So we can sit here, Andy. I made a vow to myself after this kind of first wash of free agency. Nope, I am not setting Packers fans up to get excited about a certain particular thing and then having the Packers do the exact opposite thing ever again in my life. I will not do it, Andy. I'm going to sit here and tell you, look, they could take a punter in the first round and you shouldn't be surprised. Well, okay, maybe that's a little bit overboard, but you know what I mean. It's like we on the outside as content creators, we sit here and we talk about, well, they got to do this or they should do that. There's no way they don't do that. And then they do all these things that do not line up, right? So I do the best I can. I know you do too, as far as, there are some significant needs here and seems pretty cut and dry what they need to do. But man, they got some crazy football minds in that building who may see things differently, maybe like where they place value on certain things. Because that's the other thing. I always go back to when they drafted Eddie Lacy. They had no plan to draft a running back, especially not early in that draft. And then Eddie Lacy just fell.
Yeah.
And it was way too good a value to not take him in their eyes. So they pulled the trigger, you know, and that's the beauty of the draft. That's, we don't know how it's going to happen, how it's going to unravel the draft board. You could have every intention of taking XYZ positionally, and then all of a sudden the value is just not there. Your board is shot and it's like, well, time to pivot. So yeah, I think, like you said, there are very clear areas where they have to, in our eyes, address. But we'll see. We'll find out.
Draft good players and figure out the rest later. And usually that's going to be the best.
Usually that's a good idea. Yes. Yeah. Draft good football players.
Hashtag we've solved the draft, Aaron. Just draft the football players. I don't know why this is so hard for people. It seems fairly cut and dry.
That's literally the entire Cheesehead TV draft guide. It's just 300 pages of draft good players.
Draft good football players. It's by the way, get the Cheesehead TV draft guide. It is epic every single year. Covers the Packers draft in a way that is very unique, and I can't recommend it enough.
All right, sir.
Couple other ones before we get you out of here.
Yes, sir.
Number one, does Goody need to add a little Howie to his GM game? Does there need to be a little bit more Howie Roseman of, you know what, we're going to do maybe a couple of these one-year deals with some players that we know can come in and help us right away, or maybe trade up aggressively for a player, whatever it might be. Does there need to be a little bit more Howie and Goody, or is Goody good as is?
I mean, he's good as is, and he's not changing. So I get this question sometimes on Packers Daily, and I think Tyler clipped a short about it once, but man, look, if you are a Howie fan, go be a Howie fan. But, you know, Brian's going to operate the way Brian operates, whether you want him to or not. Like, look, you and I could probably be, you know, a little frustrated at times at moves or non-moves or what have you. But it's who he is. It's who they are. It's in their blood. It's in their DNA. It's not changing. So could it improve the team? Yes. Could it, you know, maybe harm the team? Possibly, if sure. He's not operating the way he's comfortable and he just does something because he feels he has to be more like someone else. You know, that's not a automatic recipe for success. Yeah. I mean, it just seems so kind of out of the realm of reality that I don't worry too much about it. Let's put it that way.
Not Howie's song. It's Brian's song. And that's the song that we've got in Green Bay. And now he does a really good job. And I think, you know, I think there has been some evolution. There's certainly, but I think people still look at this.
That's the other thing.
Like Ted is the GM. And it's like, man, like there's been some pretty aggressive
differences.
4 years, 77 for Aaron Banks is a pretty, again, I've said this a lot, but your mileage may vary on if that's who you wanted to spend 4 years, $77 million on, but that's still a pretty aggressive free agent signing this offseason.
What kills me now is that, of course, because of people leaving the team, it's always go back and look at the draft class, right? And oh, that's a brutal draft class. No doubt about it. There were some real stinkers there at the start of Brian's tenure. But what's the solution to that? What do you want him to do? What's that? Draft better? Lo and behold, he has. Look at the last three classes. Like, this is my thing. Like, people are like, oh, that was a terrible draft. He's got to wear that draft. Like, no kidding. But can we talk about what you should do when you have some bad draft classes? Maybe, I don't know, draft better?
Yeah.
That's what he's done. And so I don't know, man. That's what I look at. You know?
A great evolution of that, in my opinion, is they spend and trade up in the third round for a undersized slot receiver in Amari Rodgers, and it doesn't work out. I think a lot of GMs would have got cold feet and said, we're not spending another high pick on a slottish wide receiver. They come back, 2 years later, and they draft Jaden Reed in the second round, and they have no hesitation in doing so and learn from the mistakes of the things that Amari did not have in his game that Jaden does have in his game. And it's been a total difference maker, and he's been such a huge pick for them. So I think he is sort of learning along the way as well.
Absolutely.
Last but not least, you talked about that urgency word earlier. And again, this was something that you and I think both believe were a little bit misconstrued. It was for people that were in the building. My sort of take on it was, if you're going to call out everyone else in the building to have a level of urgency, I don't think he could have gone out in free agency and just sat it. Like, if Mecole Hardman was the biggest signing and he did a bunch of draft and develop in the draft, I think that certainly rings hollow to everyone else in the organization of like, oh, you want us to have urgency, but Mecole Hardman's your biggest signing. Awesome. Thanks, Brian. So I think, but my question for you is, regardless of what the connotation was, Do you feel that Brian showed urgency this offseason in bringing back McManus and McDuffie and going out and signing Hardman, Banks, and Hobbs? Is that enough urgency? Or if you were going to preach about urgency, would you have maybe tried to do a little bit more?
I mean, it's fine as far as the natural evolution of his squad, meaning he's gone. We've talked a lot about it, and he kind of poo-pooed this, but we've talked a lot on the outside the last 2 years about it, the youngest team in the league, right? And they've made the playoffs, and that's an accomplishment. It's not something you hang a banner for, but it is, you know, it's notable. It's noteworthy. And I don't doubt for a moment that with their plans as far as the roster goes, these additions and the people they've allowed to walk are there to enhance what they see as a progression, a natural progression of their roster. I don't doubt that he looks at this year, but also the next year or two, and the way, again, like we talked about earlier, the way these contracts slot, where they fit, and how, who he's going to have to pay, who he's going to have to let go. I don't think any of that works if you suddenly go out and spend big or bring in a bunch of big contracts that now you've got to rip up whatever your plan was when you made the initial decision to strip it all down, go super young, and then build up and become, hopefully naturally, you know, organically become a contender. I don't doubt that he wants this team contending, but I don't think getting outside, again, his normal MO way of operating, the plan that he laid in place 2 years ago, suddenly ripping it up because they lost three games at the end of the year, that never would have felt natural, at least not for me. Yeah.
I totally agree. I think, to me, again, everyone may have a different feel of, you know, if they were the right players to spend money on, but they spent a ton of money this offseason still on Nate Hobbs, Aaron Banks. We'll see what the McCole Hardman contract looks like, but bringing back McManus and McDuffie as well. To me, that was enough urgency of what I wouldn't have expected with anything more. I expected a pretty sizable addition on defense, a pretty sizable addition on offense. They got both of those in Nate Hobbs and Aaron Banks. And to me, he continued to show that he wanted to build this team, make it better. And I think that, again, is kind of what I expected going in. So for me, it does hit sort of the urgency note. Again, maybe they could have used it on different players, but I think he did make those two solid, sizable signings. And to me, they're still set up in a very good position moving forward in 2025 and beyond, which, to your point, Goody lives in 2026, 27, 28. He does not just live in 2025 like the vast majority of us do. So he's got to look at all that stuff moving forward as well.
No doubt. No question about it.
Aaron, we've got a NFL draft coming up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You may have heard of it.
We've got
a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to be at the Timber Rattlers game the week before the draft.
You and me, buddy. It'll be a lot of fun.
Thursday, April 17th. So get your Timber Rattler tickets for that game. I know Aaron and I both have designated links for that you can go out and get those tickets and get access to the live Q&A before the game with Aaron and I. I'll put those links in our show notes for today. Also, I know you're doing a event prior to the draft. I don't know how much you've announced yet, so I don't want to spill anything if it's not out there already, but
no, you're doing your thing at Hagermeister, right?
Yep. Wednesday night live.
The draft. So yep. I know you're doing it I think you said you're going to be there late ish, like to 8 or 9 o'clock, right?
9. Yep.
So we're going to do the Cheesehead TV meetup right across the river at Stage 1, beautiful, essentially picking up where you leave off. So, like, if you come to Andy's spot, you know, you get your football fix, come on out to Stage 1 afterwards, and we're going to be there late. That's a late-night version of the Cheesehead TV Packers hangout. Stage 1, Wednesday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. And there may be a surprise or two in store. We'll see.
Awesome. I love that. It's going to be epic. It's going to be a ton of fun. There's going to be a ton of events going on. So make sure to check out. And I know you're going to probably be doing a bunch of stuff, obviously live casting, I'm sure, during the draft as well, per usual.
Yes. Absolutely.
So we're going to have a lot of stuff going on. Make sure to follow all of it over at Cheesehead TV. Aaron, anything else you want to plug on the way out?
Absolutely not. all I got to say is I really appreciate you having me on. Go enjoy Florida, and I can't wait for the huge Packers breaking news while you're gone.
Me too. I'm all for it. If I have to, I will go to Florida more often if that's what ends up happening moving forward. I'll take one for the team. Go follow him at Aaron Nagler on social media. Of course, follow Cheesehead TV for all of your Packers news. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Aaron and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.
Go Pack.